But I was glad that Fran laid out the background so that what I am about to say does not require too much context. I'm going to make three relatively short and somewhat dogmatic statements because I can't argue for my point of view very extensively in 10 minutes. The first statement is this. One of the problems that unions have faced in this country since the 1930s, I could say it goes on longer, but I'll start from the 1930s, is that after an initial burst of militancy and of independence in the period from 1929, but particularly 1933, 34, up to 35, the unions allowed themselves, for good reason, to become partners with the state. That is, not only with the Democratic Party and the government, which in 1935 passed the National Industrial Relations Act, but also with the large corporations with which they dealt. They became, in many ways, with all of the rest of what they did as well, and I'm not going to deny its importance, they became, in many ways, part and parcel of the New Deal. The term that was used at the time was coalition, but I would argue that the unions were far more than coalition partners to the New Deal. But especially after 1936, the Democratic Party could not have won a single major national election without the support of the unions. But that also entailed a quid pro quo, and that quid was that they became tied hand and foot to the New Deal, so that whenever, and the Democratic Party, so that whenever the Democratic Party veered to the right, even during the Truman administration, and especially between 1947 and 1950, 51, 52, the labor movement allowed itself in the first place to become virulently anti-communist, throwing out its most militant section of the labor movement, which happened to be at that time to a large extent under communist influence, if not communist leadership. Secondly, in the Treaty of Detroit of 1950, they became virtual partners in production and identified themselves in many instances, steel and auto specifically, with their own employers. They got a lot out of it. After the failure of the Wagner-Murray-Dingell Bill of 1949, which was the first post-war attempt at national health insurance, they negotiated pensions in and through the companies. And so now we have employer-based health care, which in my opinion is a terrible, terrible thing as a legacy to try to build any kind of decent health program. That's the first thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say is that the unions, because of somewhat circumstances beyond their control, but as well as their control, have allowed themselves, and willingly in many cases, that is not true of auto and steel, but was true of a lot of smaller retail, wholesale, and state employees' unions, to become virtual insurance companies. After the first burst of militancy in the industrial union era of 1933 to about 1940, and the state sector militancy of the late 50s through the late 60s and early 70s, the unions have settled down and become not a labor movement, but have become labor insurance companies. They provide benefits. The members look upon them as benefits. It's only in the rare instances, and they're not that rare in the sense of one in a million, but there are several cases where we can point to a labor movement which revives for the period of organizing. I refer to the national efforts of agricultural fights in California. I refer to the fights of hospital workers in the late 50s. I refer to several great strikes, the copper strike in Colorado, which was a lost strike, several important strikes like the Hormel strike, which was not supported by the leadership. And of course, it goes on. So that the labor movement flickers and dies. But the unions themselves are not a labor movement. That's my second point. My third point is that I want to express deep doubt, notwithstanding some of the better people, many of whom I've known for years, and good people who are trying to change the unions from within. Notwithstanding any of that, there is grave doubt that the unions can transform themselves from within any more than the AFL could transform itself from within in the year of our Lord, 1933, 34, 35. Now, I want to just finish by giving you a small example. I happen to be a member of the Professional Staff Congress of the American Federation of Teachers and of the American Association of University Professors. We have a dual membership. We organized in 2000 a successful rank-and-file movement. You've heard of Teamsters for Democratic Union. You've heard of the transit workers. We were successful in 2000 after a defeat. And now we are a union that represents something close to 18,000 people. I was one of the principals in the organization effort and became a member of the executive board and a member of the negotiating team. 2 years ago, I stepped down. I could have gotten reelected. Not because I thought the union had become a bad union. The union's a good union. But it's a union that is imprisoned, as are all American unions who are victimized by collective bargaining as we know it. It is imprisoned in this set of relationships, of which the parent union, the main parent union, I mean, the American Federation of Teachers is a very good example. That prison is facilitated by the fact that collective bargaining, A, signifies collaboration, and that's very difficult to overcome when you get things out of it. Now we're in a period where collective bargaining signifies retreat, concession, defeat. And nobody said, are we still in the same ball game? Should we still be playing this game? No. People are still committed to collective bargaining. The problem is not this or bad leader, this good or bad leader. The problem we face is fundamentally institutional. We have become a creature not only of law, and the law is a bad law, but we've become a creature of a legislative process. Fran indicated this quite successfully, in which, because our defeats at the workplace and organizing and in many other areas have been so extensive, we think we can achieve things through Congress and through state legislatures. I want to state this unequivocally. We cannot achieve much through Congress, if anything. The state legislatures are ready to cut public employees' benefits, and they're already doing it extensively. And what has happened during this period, because there's been now literally, I mean literally, decades upon decades of collaboration, of business unionism, even of the progressive kind, we have rendered ourselves virtually unable to rise to the occasion. And I end by saying there was one example that should have been a signal that things were in a period of significant decline. I can't go through a program of how we should revive quickly. 1981, I appeared on ABC television talking about something called the air traffic controller strike. During the air traffic controller strike, the relatively conservative leadership of the AFL-CIO responded to the strike and the fact that Reagan had fired 11,000 air traffic controllers by appealing to the president for clemency. What kind of shit is that? No, but this is serious. What it meant was, We are unwilling, unable to create trouble, to become the troublemakers that we once were. We are no longer in a position to oppose even a conservative Republican administration by tactics of disruption, of national campaign, of the kind that would have surely been the property of a union movement, 25, 30 years earlier. We are now only in a position to beg. And I would like to suggest that in many ways, the unions have become victimized by something which should be called collective begging, not collective bargaining. And that begging takes legislative forms in other ways. I will finally conclude by saying, and this is the hardest one. It may be, and I'm not being at all dogmatic about it because I'm not sure, it may be that the seeds of a new labor movement will take place by a breakaway within the AFL-CIO of some smart, progressive union people like John L. Lewis was, Dubinsky of the garment workers, Sidney Hillman against the AFL in 1934, but that the substance of the new unionism will take place largely outside of the AFL-CIO. In fact, that's where I think it's going, and I think we all should welcome it and become part of it.